Talk about your head. Let's work on your head. Let's work on tonight's topic. What we're going to try to achieve tonight is talking about the reason. Now, I don't mean justification. I mean sanity when I say reason. The reason of appealing to the Holy Spirit, that part of your mind, that calm voice in your head that's been with you since you were a child. And this voice, when you've been scared, for example, once your craziness calmed down, there was a calm voice that said, well, I guess I better get up now. I guess I better get a Band-Aid now. I guess I better call somebody now. After the car crash, you know, that little voice comes in and says, well, looks like I better do this myself. There's always been this reasonable voice in the back of your head. And that's part of a spiritual awakening. So everybody has access to this, even if you don't believe in spirit or God or afterlife or anything else. But the fact that you have, and you know you have, I mean, is it right? Does anybody here not know what I'm talking about that calm voice that's behind your, that's narrating through your whole life?
I'm not sure I do.
Okay, good, good. So when you're by yourself, Don, and let's say you're taking the laundry to the laundry chute or the laundry machine. You get to the laundry machine and you've got your clothes, but you know, you brought the clean clothes and you should have brought the hamper with the dirty clothes. So you've got a problem in your life, or you didn't bring the soap and you're all the way to the laundromat and you forgot your big bottle of soap, which was sitting right next to the clothes. How easy. But here you are with a problem standing in front of the laundry machine. Is your head quiet? Or are there thoughts going on? Is there a little narration going on? Oh, Don, you forgot the soap. Or maybe, well, now that I'm here, I'm just going to buy some soap rather than go all the way home if you go to a, say, laundromat. How do you problem solve, Don? Do you problem solve with talking to yourself?
Yeah, but probably it's a possibility. Sometimes it would be, oh, Don, or sometimes it might be, damn it, Don, or damn.
Yep, yep. Right, a little insult happens.
Yeah.
How do you problem solve, though, when you have to figure something out? Do you speak out loud to yourself? Do you hear voices at all? Or do you just kind of fumble your way through it silently with a quiet mind?
I think it's just thoughts. Thoughts.
When you read a book, do you just see the words and understand them? Or do you read to yourself quietly?
I read to myself. I read the words.
Aha.
I may not say them out loud or quietly, but
right.
I think.
But you say them in your mind.
Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And when you're preparing to talk to your wife, she gets home, you guys need a discussion. You know what? It might be a little difficult. Something you need to say to her. Something you should have told her that you didn't tell her. You better tell her. Does that just happen, or do you talk yourself through it in your mind?
You mean rehearse what I'm going to say, or
rehearse what you're going to say, try it out for size, propose to yourself that you should probably say it without swearing or without using the word you. Does that ever happen? Do you ever counsel yourself?
Sure.
I'm interested. Is anybody else unfamiliar?
I just would call that intellect. I wouldn't necessarily call it, Holy Spirit.
No, absolutely. Your ego speaks first. It's your ego most of the time.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. Okay, yes.
That's what I'm after, is you hear this voice or ego. But then sometimes, after your ego's done, when your ego's done either insulting you. Oh, Don, you should have remembered the soap. Yeah. When your ego's done, is there ever this kind of a quiet, sane voice that will come in and say, I forgot the soap when I was 20 years old. Like sometimes, you know, I would go into a room and wonder, what am I doing in this room? I walked in a hurry to get to a room, and I get to the room and I stand there thinking, why am I here? Yeah. And then I say, oh, you know, I did that when I was 20 years old too. It's not like I'm suddenly have Alzheimer's or something. I forgive the whole situation. I go back to what I was doing, and a few minutes later, oh yeah, I needed to get the flashlight. I go back to the exact same place I was and get the flashlight. And then go back to. There's a series of voices that you've been. Yeah, Kenny, let me get your mute for you. Hang on a second. Here comes the voice of wisdom and reason. Kenny, go.
I think it's the voice before words.
Oh,
that I'm working.
Very good.
That's the one I'm going to work with to find the peace.
Very good. A voice before words. That's interesting. So the voice before words I call feeling. And I like to say that BC or before course, you have feelings, but they're informed by your ego habits. So they usually fear or anger or you know, feelings of worthlessness or guilt. These kind of feelings come up as first. And then you have to sort through and try to find yourself some peace. After course, there, and you start to clear your mind and you start to lessen the ego's influence in your life. You still have all these feelings, but they run through the Holy Spirit filter so much quicker, if not immediately. But I like that. It's before the words. That's a very interesting concept. Yeah. Some people call that the unconscious or the subconscious as well, which is really an ego trap, is to give yourself a subconscious that controls you, over which you do not have control. It has control over you. You call it your subconscious or unconscious. That is an ego trap. And then the more you do your coursework, the more you discover how open the present moment is and how cleansing the present moment is. Perhaps any spiritual path, you'll get this with some good meditation time. You just discover the superpower of being in the present moment and how that has the ability to dismiss the worrying that you were so busy doing, or the fear or the guilt you were so busy with for who knows how long. And then you finally sat for a moment and freed yourself. And you discovered this superpower. Eckhart Tolle wrote a whole book on it, The Power of Now. The concept is so powerful. And, you know, you could spend time in a monastery and silent retreats and meditation. Right. If that's all you got, it's worth the whole lifetime.
Thank you.
You can't go back. You can't go backwards from discovery of what I'm talking about.
Good. Thanks.
The power of presence. You can't undo that. You can deny it. You can prefer to be, you know, distracted in other ways, but you can't undo the leverage that a spiritual awareness or awakening has on your consciousness. Can't undo it. So what we're talking about tonight is we're going to look at the sanity. The Course's word is reason. Reason will tell you, the Course says so many times. We're going to look at the sanity really of not listening to your ego. Meaning what we're going to talk about is like words like choosing the Holy Spirit or hearing the Holy Spirit or hearing the voice for God. But actually, what really happens? The voice for God is automatic. It's built into what you are in reality. So what we're really doing is learning how not to turn on the ego and look to the ego for the answer. The ego is based on fear, defensiveness, guilt, and even sin. Depends on how sophisticated you are with your fear. It's a program. It's a program running in your mind, the ego. So you don't actually look for the Holy Spirit. Did you know that? In all your spiritual studies, did you ever run across that? It's so much easier to teach to go find and do loving things in order to have love. But, you know, your old habits are stronger than your desires. Your old habits are stronger than your desires. You can desire love. You probably have for your whole life. You desire peacefulness, desire not to be afraid. You desire to be helpful. You can desire to listen before you speak your whole life. And yet what happens when the thick of the moment comes up? Oops. Ego comes right in. Said something you didn't want to say or what have you. See, it's not choosing the high side. That's not A Course in Miracles for you to suddenly choose to be holy, choose to be spiritual. No, you are holy, you are spiritual, but you are perfectly blocking it. You perfectly. So much so that if you do nothing, you'll get what you already know. That's why that section in A Course in Miracles in chapter 17, I need do nothing. Oh boy, the ego just loves to misinterpret that. You see, you're completely absorbed in defensiveness or a judgment or attack or habitual thoughts of mind that are chaotic, victimhood. It's just built into how egos and bodies live. Look at page 338, paragraph 6, sentence 1. Let's remind ourselves how Jesus puts this. In the text, you have to see this in writing in your own book, surrounded by all the other words that we're not going to read. You have to see this.
Paragraph what?
Paragraph 6.
Thank you.
Don, read for us that whole paragraph. What are we doing with A Course in Miracles? What are you doing with your spiritual path? What are you doing with your mind that would heal your pain, the ultimate pain? Go ahead, Don.
Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. It is not necessary to seek for what is true, but it is necessary to seek for what is false. Every illusion is one of fear, whatever form it takes. And the attempt to escape from one illusion into another must fail. If you seek love outside yourself, you can be certain that you perceive hatred within and are afraid of it. Yet peace will never come from the illusion of love, but only from its reality.
How's that for a paragraph? In fact, Luann, would you read the same paragraph back to Don so he can just soak it in? I got your mute. Go ahead, Luann.
Thank you, muted.
Hey, you're pretty fast on your tongue. You're pretty fast with the mute yourself.
Well, this has to stop. Okay, there. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that have built against it. It is not necessary to seek for what is true, but it is necessary to seek for what is false. Every illusion is one of fear, whatever form it takes, and the attempt to escape from one illusion into another must fail. If you seek love outside yourself, you can be certain that you perceive hatred within and are afraid of it. Yet peace will never come from the illusion of love, but only from its reality.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that sweet?
Yes.
I think we need to read it one more
time. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question about what you were saying. What I've done for years is to find answers by just listening to what comes to me from the inside without my really trying to think about it.
Yeah, okay.
And I usually get something, almost always. Always, but almost always.
Yep.
And what I have found is if what I am getting makes me feel peaceful and I feel like it's part of the truth, and if it doesn't, then it doesn't seem like it's part of the truth. Is that a good way of looking at it?
It certainly is. But you'll recognize, you can recognize peace now. And you recognize what it means to join and to loving and to think of other people's happiness equal as you think about your own happiness. You recognize those thoughts. In the early days, the ego, like when you're a teenager for sure, the ego will come up with a plan and make you very happy. It's actually an attack, isn't it? A clever attack. You fit just the right words to get that person back in the hallway for slamming something in your locker or whatever. Before course, the ego would answer all your questions. Except for those few times when it got tired and you heard that calm voice come through and just talk to you like a parent. I hope you've all had that voice, right?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, good. So now what we're doing is we're appealing to that calm voice to turn our attention away from chaos thoughts. Chaos thoughts are things like guilt or worry. You don't know one thing, that beating your head against a brick wall and worry have in common? They both feel better when you stop. Really. Worry doesn't get you anywhere. You know this. But it's a habit, see? It's an ego habit. Chasing your own tail, chewing on your own tail even. Worry. It's kind of silly, right? If you worry about something that hasn't happened, you're just kind of getting in your own way. And you know exactly how to counsel yourself to worry more, don't you? I remember counseling myself on this. I think this was before Course in Miracles even. That I promised myself, because I know I heard myself in the head, worrying about something. I thought, wait a minute, it hasn't even happened. It may never happen. And I promised myself, somewhere 18 years old or something, that I would not get in my own way. I promised myself I would not, life's hard enough, I decided, and I would not get in my own way. And I never forgot that little pledge to myself. A calm mind said, you know, Andrew, you're dreaming up problems you don't have. Yet. Maybe never. And sure enough, 9 out of 10 times, more than that even, right? It never happens. Whatever you're worried about never happens. Things happen, bad things happen, but not the stuff you were worried about. So stop worrying. Just sanity, simple thoughts that can relieve some of the chaos in your life. So let's read that exact same paragraph one more time for the richness it has. Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 6?
Your task is not to seek for love, but
you know what, Jacqueline, I'm going to have you, before you read that paragraph, I'm going to have you introduce your reading with the first two sentences from the previous paragraph.
Okay. But conflict enters the instant the choice.
Wait, sorry. It would be, there are no triumphs of love.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, sorry. The beginning of the beginning of the previous paragraph. The first sentence 1 and 2.
Okay, sorry. There are no triumphs of love. Only hate is at all concerned with the triumph of love.
Oh. Think about that just for a second. It is one of the principles that I've only seen in this book. It may be elsewhere. I hope it is in poems all over the world, I hope. But I haven't seen it elsewhere. That love is never victorious. Love doesn't win. Love doesn't fight. How can it win? Love does not conquer. I've heard plenty of songs that say love conquers all and the triumph of love, the power of love to beat out the evil. Nope. Love doesn't fight. Isn't that interesting? There are no triumphs of love. Only hate is it all concerned with triumph. Especially a triumph of love. Triumph of love is his focus as much on the loss, the problem. Triumph of love. It's an interesting point, isn't it? Love should conquer all, right? Isn't love the great power? Course of Miracles has got a nice spin on that for you.
Well, it's acknowledging the illusion.
Bingo.
And acknowledge that hate exists if we think love triumphs or we're thinking in that way or holding it that way.
Very good, Jacqueline. Very good.
That's why it says, the illusion of love can triumph over the illusion of hate, but always at the price of making both illusions. So it becomes part of the illusion. I can see that in that now.
That's the very next sentence.
Yeah.
Do you see that in your book? The illusion of love can triumph, but only over the illusion of hate. That's still an illusion. So the love that A Course in Miracles is talking about, it really must be something other than a choice. Something other than a tool.
It is.
It really is a different level of mind. It's not equal. It's love in A Course in Miracles is not equal, it's not the same level as hate. They don't mix. They never meet. They never communicate. There's never a battlefield where you'd have love on one side and hate on the other. It's so simple, right? If we did, but wouldn't that be before Course in Miracles to have a battle between love and hate, and love would win because you chose love? It's just not Course, okay? I like it, too. I think it's, we should make a great poem out of it. And I bet you there's lots of great movies that will have a little bit of love, a little bit of hate. In the end, love wins. Lots of them. Lots of great. Love it. Give the popcorn. But when we're studying your spiritual awakening, when you're studying your healing of your mind, it is not a battle. Yes, Arjuna, your approach to your healing is absolutely a battle. There's no doubt about it. However, your awakening is not a battle. So, pretty important point. But, you know, in the end, you can't miss. So we don't spend too much more time on it. But I just love how it's pasted on this page. Thank you, Jacqueline. Sentence 3, the illusion of love can triumph over the illusion of hate, but always at the price of making both illusions. And then that leaves the illusion of hatred in place. Even if you claim love won, the illusion of hatred is in place. In fact, you earned love because you turned away the hate. Wow, that's a slippery slope, right?
Mm-hmm. But isn't that what we're trying to do, is get rid of the blocks to know when there's only love?
Yes, but you're not trying to you're not trying to use love to do it.
Right. I have to get rid of the thoughts I have that cause me not to be able to know that I'm loving.
You got it, Luann. It would be hard to use love to get rid of hate, even practically, because if you had enough love to use, maybe you wouldn't have the hate in the first place. So if you're going to have a battle, you're going to need two illusions battling each other. That's the bottom line here. It's amazing. I mean, there's so much in this book. I can't believe it's only 1,300 pages. But you know what? The way we get to study it together, it's more like 130,000 pages, huh? We spend some good time with these paragraphs to open them up like this. And I think it's really, really rich that we do. But it's right there in black and white.
So, Andrew, when are you going to count all the paragraphs?
I don't know. I counted the words. No, you just look it up. It's like 497,000 words proper. If you add in the numbers and everything, you get over 500,000 words, 500,000 words. You know what, Jacqueline? Let's have you continue reading that paragraph. I'll bet you there's more jewels in there for us.
Okay. You know, I was going to say that's probably why contemplating or understanding unconditional love is challenging, because because I've been, you know, thinking and sort of meditating on unconditional love and will and other things like that. And it is very challenging to really get it. I guess it becomes an experience at some point, and that's it.
You hear what she said?
Holy instant.
Tell us more, Jacqueline. She said, is there any more on your list? She said unconditional love, and then she threw in will, just as a little side note, contemplating will. This woman is doing her Course in Miracles. These should be challenging things for your ego to make sense of. To the ego, they are unreasonable. Unconditional love is unreasonable to the ego. Will is just a fantasy to the ego. It's good, Jacqueline. That is correct. You know, you cannot understand the essence of unconditional love or will from the perspective of the ego. You would need a miracle. You would need some shift in your awareness. But, you know, that's what this book is for, to get you accident prone, and you can fall off your ego for a moment here and there, called a holy instant. But in that holy instant, there's this wordless, spacious moment of peace that goes counter to what you were thinking before. That holy instant. The Course calls it a miniature of heaven. And then that's a little ignition, a little spark happens, a lightness of being occurs to you, and you've taken a step. Like I've seen you take, Jacqueline, sometimes, right? On the Zoom call, it seems. You can't go back from these things. You may not understand them entirely. You may not know how to live with it. However, that's what enlightenment is literally an enlightening, a lightening of your being, a movement from material focus to spiritual focus, and then benefiting from that easier air, from that light. It changes you. It gradually, if not suddenly and gradually, changes you. Because now what's true dawns on your mind, in contrast to what is merely real but not true. It's kind of crazy words, but I think you get it, right? We talk about it all the time. Okay, Jacqueline, please continue. In fact, please start over and read that whole luscious paragraph.
Okay. There are no triumphs of love. Only hate is at all concerned with the triumph of love. The illusion of love can triumph over the illusion of hate, but always at the price of making both illusions. As long as the illusion of hatred lasts, so long will love be an illusion to you. And then the only choice remaining possible is which illusion you prefer. There is no conflict in the choice between truth and illusion. Seen in these terms, no one would hesitate. But conflict enters the instant the choice seems to be one between illusions. But this choice does not matter. Where one choice is as dangerous as the other, the decision must be one of despair.
Where one choice is as dangerous as the other. Are you telling me choosing the illusion of love is as dangerous as choosing the illusion of hate? There it is. It's in your book. She just read it. You bet it is. Oh my God, the illusion of love is so caustic and has so much leverage, can rip your heart out, give you justification to hate like nothing else could. The illusion of love. Why? Because it could disappear. You get the love and then you lose the love. And now you should hate whatever took the love. That's fair. Oh, okay, Jacqueline. Please continue and read paragraph 6 also.
Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. It is not necessary to seek for what is true, but it is necessary to seek for what is false. Every illusion is one of fear, whatever form it takes. And the attempt to escape from one illusion into another must fail. If you seek love outside yourself, you can be certain that you perceive hatred within and are afraid of it. Yet peace will never come from the illusion of love, but only from its reality.
So well said. Wow. But there's more. So let's have Deborah, I got your mute. Why don't you give us paragraph 7?
Recognize this, for it is true, and truth must be recognized if it is to be distinguished from illusion. The special love relationship is an attempt to bring love into separation. And as such, it is nothing more than an attempt to bring love into fear and make it real in fear. and fundamental violation of love's one condition, the special love relationship would accomplish the impossible. How but in illusion could this be done? It is essential that we look very closely at exactly what it is you think you can do to solve the dilemma which seems very real to you, but which does not exist. You have come close to truth, and only this stands between you and the bridge that leads you into it.
Read us one more sentence, Deborah, from the next paragraph.
Heaven waits silently, and your creations are holding out their hands to help you cross and welcome them.
Now go ahead and finish that whole paragraph.
For it is they you seek. You seek but for your own completion, and it is they who render you complete.
You got to read that sentence again. That's more metaphysics that I have not seen covered anywhere in such clear detail as is said in just those two sentences.
Could I start the paragraph over again?
Yes, please, because this context will help.
Heaven waits silently, and your creations are holding out their hands to help you cross and welcome them.
Now, what's key about that silently is that what I was telling you before about love does not conquer. Love doesn't fight or conquer or come looking for you. To love, you're not lost. So it waits silently. Of course. Something that's true. You know, you got to get to this truth. The state of truth is so interesting compared to the illusion. But it waits because it is not in a hurry, and it's not going anywhere. And it's so, love is so inclusive that if you choose an illusion instead of love, love fully supports that, knowing that there's nothing to be afraid of. You come up with something to be afraid of. Jacqueline.
Okay, your creations are holding out their hands to help cross and welcome them. So I'm wondering, is that, it's like we are one with God creating. And so in a way, our hands of creation are being held out to us to us to help us cross over. Is that what it's saying?
That's what it's saying, my dear.
Okay.
Your creations are thoughts of love. Your creations are thoughts that you share with God that connect you back to the mind of wholeness and of will. They're beautiful. And they're the only things that you would actually keep. And so were you to somehow become aware of your own choice to love, not some foreign, not some great idea from somewhere else of love, but your own, that is a highly charged awakening, because it's not foreign. It's super personal. It's you. Oh my God, I actually spoke for God there. This will be a creation. Oh my God, the thought that I had was so selfless. I really wanted that person to succeed, that other person to succeed. That's a little creation, a joining that taps into this power of beauty that can only be known from the perspective of love. So yes, absolutely, Jacqueline. You got that. Very good translation. Okay, Deborah, from the top. Once more with feeling.
Heaven waits silently, and your creations are holding out their hands to help you cross and welcome them. For it is they you seek. You seek but for your own completion. and it is they who render you complete. The special love relationship is but a shabby substitute for what makes you whole in truth, not in illusion. Your relationship with them is without guilt, and this enables you to look on all your brothers with gratitude, because your creations were created in union with them. Acceptance of your creations is the acceptance of the oneness of creation, without which you could never be complete. No specialness can offer you what God has given and what you are joined with Him in giving.
You see the circle right there? Acceptance of your creations is acceptance of the oneness of creation. Wow! Going right out of the curriculum. But it's there for you to help you celebrate this idea of heaven and of your true identity as a creator. It's right here. It's right here in your book. Acceptance of your creations is acceptance of the oneness of creation. Wow, is that metaphysical spirituality, comma, without which you could never be complete. Do you see the circle? Do you see your plan, you know, your part in God's plan for salvation now? And why we need a workbook to practice that one sentence. There's a couple workbook lessons that really just practice that one sentence. Because you really need to own it. And you need a miracle to own it. You have to get out of your ego and get into your spiritual awareness and the power of your mind, the presence of mind. And look at the one before it. Sentence two. For it is your creations that you seek. Sentence three, you seek, but for your own completion, and it is your creations who render you complete. Do you see the circle? Maybe this journey of your spiritual awakening, the circle I keep describing over and over again, it is a journey without distance. Maybe it's closer to you than you could possibly imagine. Spoiler alert, you bet it is. Everyone who has an awakening has this instant assurance that says, oh my goodness, it was here the whole time. That very sentence, roughly, is in chapter 17. It says this moment of understanding comes with always the same recognition, quote, I need do nothing, end quote. That's right out of chapter 17. But you're going to have to learn how to do nothing. And that's what A Course in Miracles is for. Learn how to do nothing, because you're very busy doing with your ego all the time, every hour, every minute, every moment that each minute holds is filled with ego. You're an addict. It's okay. We got a program. 365 easy to follow steps. You can do it too. Now, sentence three, you seek but for your own completion, and it is your creations who render you complete. There's a whole lesson that helps surface this. In fact, hang on a second. Go to workbook page 459. It's lesson 318. And I'll, just in the interest of time, I'm going to zoom you right to the very sentence. You're already introduced to the idea that we're discussing. Look at page 459 in the workbook, lesson number 318. Holy cow, there's what we've been talking about. See that title? In me. Salvation's means and are one. I already got what it takes, it says. And then I just want you to zoom down, paragraph one, sentence five. This should be highlighted by now. I was created as the thing I seek. Whoa. This really is going to be a journey without distance. You were created as the thing you seek. Yeah. I hope that's really good news. And if it's confusing to you, I hope at least the mystery is comforting that it might be true. You were created as the thing you seek. Guess what? You were given in your creation, which means the truth of you is what you seek already. Just let the possibility of that light on your mind for a moment. Oh, wow. You are so loved. You are an extension of love itself. And you've just been dreaming that you're not. Elaborately dreaming. But still, doesn't change your creation. You know, the book has you rehearse again and again and again and again. I'm not a body. I am free, for I'm still as God created me. Again and again and again. It's the most repeated phrase in the entire book. It's also the most difficult one to learn. Same as the truth is true, comma, and only the truth is true. That's very hard to learn. The first part of that sentence, of course, is obviously easy. But the second half of that sentence from chapter 14 is not so easy. And it is this: only the truth is true. You see, you're so addicted to the false that you want to make that true too. Also, in fact, you might even say that my contribution to the truth is what I already believe. But that's the false. That's a block to the awareness of the truth. Now, let's go back to remind you why we went even on this whole adventure. Go back to page 338, paragraph 6, sentence 1, and let me just close this circle before we go to tonight's reading. Everything we've just been discussing ties up in a bow with paragraph 6, sentence 1. It says, your task is not to seek for love, comma, but merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that you have built against love. Period. It's starting to make things simpler, I hope. You don't have to go outside of you and learn something. Really. You don't need tricks and techniques. What we're talking about is an undoing of something that you are doing every hour, every minute, every second, and every instant that each second holds. Do you want to see where it says that? Turn to page 552. 552 in the text. And then we'll get back to tonight's reading. Look at auspicious paragraph 13. If you're into numerology, which I'm absolutely not, I just know 13 is the unlucky number. It's number 13. Tim, I got your mute. If you're there, would you read for us on 552, paragraph 13? In fact, before you read 13, because Michaeline has joined us, I would like her to read 12. And she'll know why as soon as she gets to that paragraph. I got your mute, Michaeline.
Okay, thanks, Andrew.
You're welcome.
The shadow voices do not change the laws of time nor of eternity. They come from what is past and gone and hinder not the true existence of the here and now. The real world is the second part of the hallucination. Time and death are real and have existence that can be perceived. This terrible illusion was denied in but the time it took for God to give his answer to the illusion for all time and every circumstance. And then it was no more to be experienced as there.
In other words, poof.
It's gone.
Right? Okay, Tim, hit us with paragraph 13.
Each day and every minute in each day and every instant that each minute holds, you but relive the single instant when the time of terror took the place of love. And so you die each day to live again until you cross the gap between the past and the present, which is not a gap at all. Such is each life, a seeming interval from birth to death and on to life again, a repetition of an instant gone by long ago that cannot be relived. And all of time is but the mad belief that what is over is still here and now.
Groundhog Day.
Yes. I think if somebody read that paragraph to you just randomly, you say, oh, I'll bet you that's A Course in Miracles. Right. It's just saying, it's just pointing out your habit of mind so that your teacher knows and visits with you and says, like, I know what you do all day long. I know you've come to study Course in Miracles. You sat down with the book, he says, but a paragraph like that just gets so close to me, of the struggling Andrew, who really wants to be free. And I read a paragraph like that, and I think, wow, this book knows me better than I know me. And Jesus is not afraid to say, I know these shadow voices. I know what you're going through, and I haven't given up on you. Even though you've read 552 pages in my book, says Jesus, and you're still arguing with yourself. He says, I haven't given up on you. I mean, isn't that great? I just love that. That's all the way through the book. You write it into the manual for teachers. You will find sentences like that and paragraphs like this, which say, but I know you're a recovering ego addict and you slip from time to time. But I also know that if you come this far, it's none of these horrible things that you think to yourself you would keep. And you don't have to get rid of them all. Just know that you would keep none. It's the key. Yes, Jacqueline?
Well, it's pointing to the truth. It's always circular. I know you talk about the circular, and we see that over probably every paragraph is circular, and maybe every sentence. And I was thinking that in a way the ego mimics that. Everything about the ego is totally circular also.
Yes.
So it's a mimic of the circular nature of truth in a way. I don't know, just a thought.
Take the word truth out and put in the word mind. And now I'm going to repeat your sentence back to you with that change-a-roo. It's a mimicking of the nature of mind. Hmm. Truth has a different nature than the ego in that the truth gives and only gives. It's not in competition. It never takes. It's a constant flowing of truth.
Excuse me.
Bless you, Dawn. So, but the nature of mind, it's a teaching, your sentence. Because the nature of mind, as is taught in this book, is that from the perspective you look, you will learn. If you look with the ego and you have fear in in your mind, mind, then you will learn more fear. And you will start to justify your fear with some judgment, and you'll get a feeling in your body. Will say, I knew I was afraid. I should have been afraid. And then off you go. Self-referencing, the circle of mind, self-referencing, because it's the author. What's the pithy phrase? You know, seeking, you will find. you spot it, you got it, because you're looking for it. And then you'll justify what you're looking for. Circular nature of mind. That works in the other direction too when we talk about healing. Because as you think patience, for example, you get more patient. As you think kindness, you start to be a little more kind. As you think honest, you start to get more honest and expect honesty, and on and on and on. And so it's, yes, Jacqueline, your mind is self-referencing. There are two voices and two choices, and that's it. So it does make it quite simple. Good.
Yeah, Andrew, can I say something?
Yes.
One of the things that I'm really becoming attuned to lately with everything and what's going on and stuff is the more I focus and give attention to the things that aren't real, that illusion of the world, the bigger it gets. Like, I forget in the moment because I'm focusing on something out there, it becomes bigger. It's like it takes over. But if I'm still in quiet and I don't give attention to that, and it's really hard sometimes, but I am more at peace, a lot more at peace. So,
Michaeleen, it's the doorway through which you will pass on your awakening.
Yeah.
I call it door A. Mm-hmm. And door B is looking at the past and the time and the future. And you'll never get there.
No.
Because you're inventing it as you go along, and you'll continue to invent and never get there. However, to come to the present moment, it turns off this unending search. To get to the present moment, it turns off the unending search, because suddenly you are where you're going. Mm-hmm. Do you see? It's the only way you can arrive anywhere is to be where, when, and how you are in that moment, even if it's afraid. Hopefully it's in love, but at least it should be at rest. If you get one of these new chairs that I have, maybe it will be for you.
Good point.
And you just live it for a second in the present, and you find, my God, I'm found. I'm found. And then your key is, from there on out, never move away from the present ever again. You think, well, good goal. But you know, you can deny the truth, but you can't change it. And so when once this, what you just described, Michaeleen, how everything can get small and peaceful, and you somehow, the world disappears, that's a spiritual awakening. That's a holy instant. You know that happens to you, and you can do that. And therefore, the gig is up eternally, forever. The worried Michaeleen, now you know she's a choice. Now you know that each day and every minute in each day and every instant that each minute holds, in the hands of your ego, you relive the single instant when the time of terror, you're choosing terror every day, every hour, every instant. You're choosing to relive the separation. Yeah, very good. Good. Such is each life, a seeming interval from birth to death. Oh, man. He puts my whole life in perspective. A seeming interval from birth to death. Seeming interval. And then on to life again. That should make you ponder about the open-mindedness of Jesus, because multiple lives are being discussed, not as required, but as accepted. Because you could absolutely do that with your ego. Are you kidding me? Your ego? How many lives do you think you could come up with trying to satisfy your ego? He knows. He knows. This book knows. This book knows. But you know what? It's a repetition of an instant gone by long ago from Jesus' perspective that actually cannot be relived, cannot be actually lived as new, cannot be lived as new. Jesus knows. The awakened part of your mind knows. You can't relive the separation, the moment of separation. And he says, what's more, before we get back to the curriculum, he says, what's more, all of time, it's but the mad belief that what's over is still here and now. Wow. Come on, man. This paragraph is loaded with perspective from your chosen teacher. This is the gift that you have given yourself when you read A Course in Miracles. That this level of correction is, you can discover it throughout the book. It's just waiting for you. Congratulations. You gave yourself this gift. Good job. Thank you. I thank you because I share your mind. Thank you. All right. I just love that. We will come back to that paragraph many times. I think we better get to our reading tonight. There's something else I'll read another day. All right, so let's go to text page 458. Text page 458. Let's look at our challenge for this evening in yet more words. Kenny, you feel like reading?
No, I appreciate you asking, though.
All right, good. Good. All right. Yeah. In that case, let's have Jason, would you like to read? I got your mute.
Okay, what paragraph?
Page 458, paragraph 8.
All right. Faith and perception and belief can be misplaced and serve the great deceiver's needs as well as truth.
Oh, start over and just read that again.
Faith and perception and belief can be misplaced and serve the great deceiver's needs as well as truth.
That's what Jacqueline and I were discussing. That it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The circle, the mind, the nature of mind. Please continue.
But reason has no place at all in madness, nor can it be adjusted to fit its end. Faith and belief are strong in madness, guiding perception toward what the mind has valued. But reason enters not at all in this, for the perception would fall away at once if reason were applied. There is no reason in insanity, for it depends entirely on reason's absence. The ego never uses it, because it does not realize that it exists. The partially insane have access to it, and only they have need of it. Knowledge does not depend on it, and madness keeps it out. Madness keeps it out.
Ross, would you read for us? I got you, Ross. Would you read for us paragraph 9? And Let's see if it continues just right.
The part of mind where reason lies was dedicated by your will in union with your father's to the undoing of insanity. Here was the Holy Spirit's purpose accepted and accomplished, both at once. Reason is alien to insanity, and those who use it have gained a measure, who have gained a means which cannot be applied to sin. Knowledge is far beyond attainment of any kind, but reason can serve to open doors you closed against it.
Power of sanity is there to dissolve the false power of the ego, hatred, worry, even being a body, death, everything. Everything, everything, everything is an adventure that you've been taking. Insanity, a big adventure in falsity, in illusion. And it's been a blast. It's been a blast. But some part of you now would like to go home. That's the only reason you're on a spiritual path. Because it's time for you. Let's read another one. Cecilia, are you there? Would you like to read? Unmute yourself if you'd like to read.
Yeah.
That a girl?
I'm right here. Hold on. Hold on.
Oh, Cecilia.
My computer is a little weird.
Okay.
Okay.
Come back. You turned it on and then you turned it back off.
Oh, okay. Can you see me?
There you are. Now I can see you. Good.
Okay. So where are we exactly now?
We're on page 458 in the text.
Mm-hmm.
Paragraph 10.
Ah, okay. All right. You have come very close to this. Faith and belief have shifted, and you have asked the question the ego will never ask. Does not your reason tell you now the question must have come from something that you do not know, but must belong to you? Faith and belief, upheld in reason, cannot fail to lead to change perception. And in this change is room made way for vision. Vision extends beyond itself, as does the purpose that it serves, and all the means of its accomplishment.
Ross, would you indulge us and tell us what vision is in A Course in Miracles? Come on, man.
I was just looking at that going, we didn't get to chapter 21.
I know.
So vision isn't with the eyes. Well, it says, let's see, what does it say here? Vision extends beyond itself, as does the purpose that it serves and all the means for its accomplishment. Wow.
That's quite the sentence. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot in that.
It's a lot in there. Wow. What's vision, Ross?
But as we talked about, vision is still part of the illusion.
Yes. So
vision would have to be you or perceiving something.
Yeah.
Vision.
Yeah.
In oneness, you're not going to have vision.
What is vision better than looking with your eyes with sight?
Sure.
Why?
And we're talking about true perception versus vision.
Yes.
Perception allows you to see the real world.
True perception.
But vision to me is a little bit above that in the levels going up to oneness. So it's a little less obtuseness, more oneness.
Right, right. Just like forgiveness itself is, it's an illusion, of course, says, but it's an illusion that ends the other illusions. Vision is a way of perceiving that ends the illusions. You still have to perceive because you're so separate. You're so addicted to separation. You still need a translation, a transition, a bridge, a healing still has to occur. And rather than seeing, which witnesses to something separate outside of you, using all the mechanisms of the illusion itself, you go to vision, which is not seeing, it is understanding. That's how this book uses this word. It's a key word. It's really good. Yeah. Okay. We have time? We do. Okay. Let's look at this paragraph a little closer. Paragraph 10. The one reading the book, the one on the spiritual path who has read presumably 457 pages and hung in there, continuing to read Jesus' words, you have come very close to this. And what he says to this is by using reason, is having a sane thought that maybe, for example, if you're having a tough time with a loved one, maybe you should listen before you speak. Just as an example, how different is that, right? The ego says, I don't need a discussion. They need to hear me and I'll straighten it all out. Once they hear how right I am, they'll say they're sorry and this whole thing will be over. But I have to raise my voice because they seem to be trying to say something. But if they would just hear me first, it'll be done. So says the ego, fighting its way. Oh, my God. But, you know, isn't it more loving? Isn't it more joining? Isn't it kinder? Isn't it more gentle? Isn't it more generous? Isn't it more open-minded? Isn't it more loving? Isn't it more present, patient, kind, defenseless, to listen first and join with the person with whom you're having difficulty first? That would be reasonable, for example. For example, you've come very close. That's why it says you've come close. You've had times where you've been a loving, kind, generous, open-minded, honest, faithful person. Sure. Faith and belief have indeed shifted in you. And you have asked the question the ego will never ask. What might the question be that the ego will never ask? Jacqueline? I can see you mouthing something. I hope it's good.
What am I?
In truth.
Yeah. That's just what I thought came up for me. That's
great. The ego will never ask that. The ego will never ask, what am I? Anybody else want to contribute? What would the ego never ask? The ego, the separate, proud one that already has all the answers.
The ego would not trust. The ego would not have trust or faithfulness.
Right, Michaeline. Ego doesn't ask because it doesn't trust any answer. Oh, my God. So the Course tells us in chapter 16, it says, you know, the ego doesn't actually have any positive goals. So it really doesn't want any answer from anybody. It only knows what it doesn't want. Because it's based on fear. It's based on what it hates. And as long as it doesn't have what it hates, it'll be happy, says the ego. No positive goal at all. Very good, Michaeline. Anybody else? What's that, Jason?
Where am I? The ego can never ask, where am I?
It can never ask, where am I? It can never ask in what context.
Where it is.
Right?
Right. It can never locate itself.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Don?
What is true?
What is true, which would mean that opens the possibility that there's something really false about what I've been thinking. The ego will never say, I'm completely wrong. It'll never stand aside. The ego will not step back and let him lead the way. That's absolutely right. What's something else, the ego? Anybody else want to pitch in before I show you something in that popped in my head in the book? The ego will never ask. The ego knows everything. Luann.
What could there possibly be but me?
Oh! Wow. The ego will never seek context. Can't afford to. And it's nice that you said that, Luann, because what happens when you honestly look at something else that exists that is beyond you? But if you honestly do it, now honestly do it, then your circle of understanding increases and you start to include whatever you find. Compassion comes on, understanding comes on, love comes on. If you honestly, honestly, honestly do that. Very good. Very good. Look at text, page 660. Text, page 660. I'm sure this will probably use up our time because this is so interesting. top of the page now. This whole page is just wonderful. But may as well read the whole paragraph 17. I think we have enough time. We certainly do. So let's have Michaeline. I got your mute. Will you read for us?
Oh, God.
On page 660, paragraph 17.
The world can teach no images of you unless you want to learn them. There will come a time when images have all gone by, and you will see you know not what you are. It is to this unsealed and open mind that truth returns, unhindered and unbound. Where concepts of the self have been laid by, is truth revealed exactly as it is.
Hey, I think we just found in A Course in Miracles where it says what to do. Did Jesus bury it here on page 660, paragraph 17, and have Michaeline read it for us with sentence 4, and that's it? Are we done? Did we find the magical sentence? You don't have to do any workbook lessons. You don't have to study the book or any other book for that matter.
Concepts.
She just read it. Where concepts of the self
are laid by,
have been laid by, is truth revealed exactly as it is, full stop. Hey, maybe this isn't as hard as I thought, right? Maybe you can do this. Luann.
I got stuck on one thing I heard this evening. And that is my ability to so-called reason, to come up with ways of figuring things out. None of them are going to work.
None of them.
None of
because
them.
That's a small, non-capital self that has ways to work things out. Remember, part of our lesson tonight is that you do not seek for love. This is nothing you will do. There's nothing for you to do here. Folks, there's nothing for you to do here.
Wow.
There is something for you to undo here. But remember, to undo means you just don't do. It's really simple.
Yeah.
But you know, you would need a miracle to have the courage to stop and be still for an instant. to get this lightness of being that will never go away. But you can totally do that. Do it. You could do it tonight. In a couple of minutes when we stop the Zoom call, you can just sit and breathe and become present and drop all concepts of self just for an instant. Do this. Let this be a gift for yourself. Michaeline, please continue.
When every concept has been raised to doubt and question and been recognized as made on no assumptions that would stand the light, then is truth left free to enter in its sanctuary, clean and free of guilt. There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or myself.
Right.
Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are will tell you of itself.
Wow, there it is again. The glorious truth of the power of your mind that Jacqueline and I were talking about earlier. If you would only allow the power of oneness to speak for a moment, it would tell you of itself through your own understanding. Wow! You've got to love the tightness of that circle.
I have used that quote sometimes when I've been and I'm finding myself going into a spiral of, I just remind myself I don't know. Well, I don't know anything, but also that I don't know the thing I am. I can't do anything.
Yes.
There's nothing I can do.
Yes.
And there's freedom in that, but yet, you know, we learn. So we've learned all this life that it's not good. You know, it's kind of counter going against, but it really isn't. It's freeing.
It invites something the ego would never allow. It invites a dark night of the soul, which is not depressing.
No. I used to feel depressed by it, but I didn't know what it was then. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel... I didn't trust.
You didn't trust, and you also had some concept of what it should be like.
Right.
And that's what depression is when you have something, it's not going your way.
Right. And the ego is going, phew.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I don't have to fight it. I don't have to do anything.
If you really trust it, if you really trusted that there was, you would still exist if you let go of all your concepts of self, all your small YOU concepts of yourself. Wow. Just for a moment is all it takes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Then in that moment is salvation born.
Wow.
Remember, salvation is code for the power of your own mind. You really don't understand your mind. You really do think you're a victim to the world.
Right.
So it does take this stopping, this ceasing of linear time and this idea of yourself.
Right. Taking care of myself.
But then.
It's all fear.
It's all fear. Absolutely, Jason.
Oh, sorry. Let me on.
Hey, you're doing great, buddy. I'll mute you if it's necessary. Right now you're helping. And what capital W-H-A-T, which is the second word of the sentence, it's no mistake, and what you are, not who you are, that's back in ego land, will tell you of capital I itself.
Right.
Tim, what do you got?
Sometimes a visual metaphor helps me, at least. In 1977, which I think we're all old enough to remember it, the first of the Star Wars movies came out, and there's a scene where Obi-Wan Kenobi, the wise old, you know, master, fights with Darth Vader on the Death Star in a hallway while his friends make good their escape. And he stops fighting at one point and lets his lightsaber collapse into itself, sort of sheathing his sword, and says, if you strike me down, Darth, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. He doesn't fight. He doesn't use love to try to contradict the evil in Darth Vader. He simply understands he needs to do nothing. And in that, he becomes all. And that takes tremendous understanding and wisdom and courage. The idea was given to George Lucas by, I'm trying to remember the name of the fellow who collected all of the myths of the world, Joseph Campbell.
Oh.
So Joe and was very tight, lived at Skywalker Ranch until his death.
Wow.
And so that concept of just, no, vunk, and then understanding that, you know, if you don't want to be here any longer, stop wanting to be here.
Also the confidence of facing off with the darkness. The confidence that if I let go of this mortal form, I don't lose my ability to fight the darkness. I actually gain more power.
The holy instant.
The holy instant. Yes.
And so that image will come to mind when I read some of this material.
I like it. I like it a lot. Yes. Yes, the competent master knows. Good, good. Well, thank you, everybody. That was a good job. I think we did a really good job with that section. Thank you, everybody, for hanging in there with me and studying A Course in Miracles with me.
Thank you for leading us.
Thank you, Andrew.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Have a nice week.